With so many options, why choose Arizona State University?
For me, the only online option was ASU because of the quality. Their faculty was really involved with their students and care about your personal journey. The dedication to my personal development from my professors, that's been extremely valuable to me.
Earn your degree from the nation's most innovative university. Online. That's a degree better. Explore more than 350-plus undergraduate, graduate, and certificate programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
Are you scouring the web for the best Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals? Stop it. Get Rakuten. Rakuten is a shopping sidekick that gets you cash back on gifts for everyone on your list. Right now, you can get up to 15% cash back at the stores you love. You can even stack cash back on top of the biggest sales of the year. That's savings on savings. It's more time shopping and less time searching. With Rakuten, you're always saving at your favorite stores on the things you're already buying. Cash back is automatically added to your account as you shop, and you can get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. It's truly a no-brainer. Now's the time to join. Up to 15% cash back ends on 12/2. Plus, new members will receive a welcome bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's Rakuten. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another brilliant sport and lifestyle biz hit on your Feel Good Radio, UK Health Radio. This week we've got an absolute star show. We've got two from the world of motorsport. Louis Delatraz, recorded before he went to Le Mans last weekend, telling us about how he got into the sport and also looking forward to the greatest race in endurance racing. And Heather Hadley, our star racer now in the MX5 Cup from America. And sandwiching between them, we have Dawn Whittaker, CFO of East Sussex Fire and Rescue and the head of Drowning Prevention. Throw in our SLB Sports Roundup and I just know you're going to love it. Enjoy the show. Well, everybody, joining me today is an absolute superstar in the motorsport world. It's Louis Delatraz, Switzerland racing driver. Hi, Louis, how are you?
Hello. I'm really good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, absolutely brilliant. Thank you for giving your time up. I really, really appreciate that. I just really want to get the listeners to know about you, what you do. We know currently you're competing in three different championships, which means you must be so busy, but obviously a good thing. We'll come on to the championships in a while, so if everyone could get to know you a little bit better, I wonder if you could tell us what it was like growing up, how you got into motorsport, and what really got you hooked into it.
Yeah, it's actually a family story for me. Basically, my dad was racing. He went to Formula One for a few races, but he did mostly sports cars racing with Le Mans 24 hours, and his F1 stuff was before I was born. Probably I visited my first race in the belly of my mother when I was still not born, and then I was on track, like following some of my dad's races. And I have memories from childhood there, so I guess that's what got me into motorsport. And then yeah, we had a lot of fun with my dad when he put me in karting and we started together. So that's a really, I guess he never forced me, but I always wanted to do it and always had passion for this sport.
Fabulous. So obviously you had the bug, really, as you said, you went there while you were still inside your mum's tummy, which is fabulous. How did you start out? What was your first in-race action in motorsport?
So now motorsport has evolved so much. You see those 3-4 years old kids, like actually Max Verstappen started like at 2, I think, karting, and right, much earlier than me. My dad was a bit worried that I was too young. When I was 8 years old, I was like, I want to race. He said, well, it's a bit early for karting. Let's go do soapbox. So soapbox is basically downhill. You create your own car with some wood four wheels and you put some brakes on. You make in your own garage in the winter and it goes downhill, no engine. So you just race as quick as you can, and we had a lot of fun building one in the garage over winter with my dad and making some races. That's actually how I started, and then we showed up to the first race and we saw all the competitors and tried to copy them, and because they had better cars than us. And obviously this was the start of it. When I was 10 years old, straight away I went to karting and moved up from there, then single seater and etc. Obviously result was the objective, and as it went well I could move up.
Great. So, yeah, so you started early. You said you went on karting. A couple of things that I noticed that you've obviously done well at. You were in the Formula Renault that you went for a few years, the GP2 series and Formula 2 as well. How did those years help you and what was your highlight during them?
Yeah, exactly. The first competitive championships I did was Swiss Championship in karting, which I won twice.
Yeah.
And then when I was about 15, there was either going international with karting, doing the world championships, European championships, but money is always a big topic in motorsport. And it was either going international and the amount of money asked was insane and we didn't have it. And then I got an offer from BMW to race in their Talent Cup, was called, was a junior, like Formula 4 basically, of before. And that was much cheaper to actually race proper single-seater cars. And that's how I moved in. Did my first year there, it was fantastic. Went to Formula Renault, the European Championship, which I won in the end after the third year, and the second in the World Championship. The Formula Renault 2-liter was like a Formula 3 of right now. And then I moved to GP2, which became Formula 2. It was basically the same category, just different cars. Did a few podiums there, never won, unfortunately. I think I was not always the right place, right moment, but right. No regrets. And always tried to move up to Formula 1. Did my Formula 1 tests, had good results, but I mean, in the end, it's very political. There's only 20 spots at the top level, and I didn't make it, but it was very close and there was no regrets.
No, and it is that sort of key thing, isn't it? It's a bit like Formula One, as you said, there's only 20 seats. To liken that, it's a bit like football, for example, in the Premier League. You could have a brilliant season, but you still may not win it. It doesn't mean you've had a bad season. And just because you don't make one of them 20 seats doesn't mean you're not a good driver. You're still a very good driver. But as you said, sometimes it's money, sometimes it's right place, right time, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's 20 drivers in Formula 1, 20 in Formula 2, and about 30 in Formula 3. I think the years I was in Formula 2, you know, I was with Lando Norris, Charles Leclerc, Albon, Russell. We were all good. And I think the top 15 of Formula 2, put in the Mercedes those years, which was dominating, or the Red Bull right now, would have done well. Very well, because the level is incredible, and I have so much respect for all my competitors, because I think we all fought at so high level, which actually taught me a lot for where I am right now, and I think definitely shaped me up for competitive and trying to always do my best, because you fight against the best constantly, and not everyone makes it to F1, and there's no problem in this, because then obviously the second best route is endurance racing, which I'm in now, and sports cars, where with other manufacturers, and the level is also incredibly high, and obviously we make a living out of it, so that's always the objective.
Absolutely, and one thing I was going to say was, you mentioned that you were very, very close, and just how close you were, I can say two things, was that you were put on the F1 Young Driver Program, which obviously is a massive compliment to you, but then you were also named as a test driver for Haas, which, again, is the next step down from having a seat, isn't it?
It is the next step down. I mean, I got reserve driver 2 years. I was doing all the sim development for Ferrari and Haas in F1 for 2 years too. So I was very close, attending a lot of GPs. And I drove the car in Abu Dhabi, I think it was 2019, which was already like putting like one foot in the dream, being very close to it. And yeah, then obviously things didn't turn out this way. Obviously it was very close, I think, for me to be in Formula 1 when Grosjean had his crash in Bahrain with the fire, which I think most of people saw now. Which he was very lucky to be still alive. It's incredible. Obviously, I'm super happy for him that it all went well. And I was very close to replace him at those last two races in Bahrain and Abu Dhabi. It didn't work out. That's right. Like it is. But I think I have no regrets. I had a super license. And yeah, I think I can be proud of being in that situation of maybe having been Formula 1.
Absolutely. I mean, how amazing is that? Like, it's every boy's dream, pretty much, you know. And you were, like, within touching distance. And sounds like you were pretty unlucky not to get a drive, which is amazing credit to you again. What was it like to be part of the experience of Romain Grosjean's crash in Bahrain? I mean, it must have been an absolute miracle. Well, it is a miracle, surely, that he escaped pretty much unhurt, wasn't it, as well, really?
Yeah, the crash of Romain, to be honest, was horrible. Romain is a very close friend of mine. I remember watching the race because I was on site. And when I saw this, I think everyone thought he was dead.
Yeah, I agree.
There was no outcome of this. Racing is dangerous, we all know it. I mean, we accept the risk. The safety has improved a lot, but this crash was just insane. And I really thought that day I lost a very good friend. Yeah. And seeing him climbing out of the fire was obviously crazy. A lot of joy to see him walk out. And then I visited him next day in the hospital, and seeing him, he was fine and just slightly burned in the hands. It's incredible. So it was a really bad moment for all of us to watch, but the outcome of it is obviously great because Roman's alive and with us and still racing.
Of course, yeah. And it must have been, when you saw him, it must have been like a rub your eyes moment.
It was really long, 1.5 minutes when he was on the fire. I don't obviously remember everything because it was, I think everyone was a bit in the shock, but it was very, very long. This 1.30 minutes felt like forever. And I cannot even imagine for his wife, kids, who I know very well, who was home in Switzerland, watching this on TV. I think it's horrible.
Absolutely. Yeah, thankfully, I suppose in a way they weren't there, but I suppose at that time, perhaps they wanted to be, because, you know, you want the first-hand update, don't you, really? Yeah, absolutely amazing and fabulous that he came out so unscathed, really.
Exactly. The safety improved so much thanks to FIA. Also with the halo on the cars now, yes. I think we're much more protected. Sports cars racing, we have a roof, so we're less exposed to danger. But obviously still, that those high speeds, when you crash, the body never likes it.
No, absolutely. So that's all brilliant. Obviously, after that, you went to the endurance. What was the reason for a switch? Was it because it was the best drive offer you had, or was it something you'd been interested in looking at doing anyway?
Basically, in Formula 2, you don't really get paid. Okay. You have to find sponsors, you have to make it work, because it's a way to try to go to Formula 1, but you cannot make a living out of Formula 2. So it's either you move to Formula 1, or at some point you have to commit to something else. I got an offer over winter from WRT, one of probably the best endurance team in the world right now, and with teaming up with Robert Kubica in the European Championships. And I mean, when I got the offer, it was great. I didn't even hesitate. I took it. And I mean, we went on to win the endurance championship as first timers. And I think this was the start of my endurance career. And I mean, I had no doubts of going. I always wanted to do this and Le Mans, because I saw my dad doing it. And it's not like a plan B. It's something I always wanted to do. And that's how it went. Yeah, the offer was great. And I loved endurance racing. I'm so happy right now and enjoying it. So plus the opportunities and yeah, as I said again, in Formula 2, you cannot make a living of it. In endurance racing, that's where you can make a career of 15 or 20 years.
Wow. And that's amazing. Obviously, the long endurance, how do you find that as a driver? Is it something that you had to get used to, or is it something you adapted to quite quickly?
The first thing is ego, because in single-seater, you don't share your car. You're alone.
Right.
You have a team behind you, but you're alone in the car. Endurance racing, obviously, every 2.5 hours, 3 hours, you switch driver and try to bring the car to the end of the race, obviously in a good position. And you need to work together. You need to support each other. There should not be ego. And I always get along well with my teammates, so I think that's warm, suits me well. And obviously, physically, it's tough because you don't sleep. 24-hour race, you sleep maybe 1-2 hours, and you're driving at those very high speeds. It's tiring. You lose 3-4 kilos while you drive at the end of the race. It's insane. So yeah, the physical challenge is very big.
Yeah, I imagine it is. And as you said, ego, I didn't even actually think of that possibility, you know, because I presume cars slightly different, I think, obviously the endurance cars, but like Formula One cars and Formula Two cars, they're actually set up specifically for you, aren't they?
Exactly. You need to make compromises in endurance because it needs to fit everyone's the best, because that's the quickest way to the end.
Yeah,
the races are much longer. In Formula One, you really have to kind of kill your teammate, because that's the reference. He has the same car as you and you want to be better to keep your job. And for us, it's a bit different. We have to work together to win.
And it's amazing. Fabulous. So you've won a couple of titles, the European Le Mans Series. Tell us about how that was, you know, not only the feeling of winning it, but obviously through the series, you obviously were right up there all the way.
So far, I have to say I've been lucky. I guess I did the right work and right choices, but we won the European Championship in 21 and 22, so the last 2 years.
Yep.
And we're currently leading again in 23, so I hope I can make it 3 years in a row, because it would be pretty fantastic. So we won a lot of races, a lot of nice races. We've been competitive everywhere. We also won the American Championship last year and finished second in Le Mans. So obviously we missed the top step in Le Mans. But the last few years have been great to me, and can only say thank you to all the people who helped me there.
So currently, as we said earlier, you drive in 3 series. Before we move on to your big race coming up, can you quickly tell us the 3 series and a little bit about them?
So the first one is the FIA World Endurance Championship, which is including the 24 Hours of Le Mans, which we're racing in next week. This has 7 rounds all across the world, so Europe, US and Asia. So this is one of the championship. Also still race full-time in America, which is an amazing championship because the people are very different. The culture is very different in America, and they have much more freedom, I think, in the racing and in all how they see things, which is nice, I have to say. And as well, the European Championship, which only takes place in Europe with shorter races. The races are like 4 hours long. So less long, still long, but not as long as the 24-hour one. And this makes around 20 races a year, which, yeah, a great calendar.
Brilliant. As you said, you won the European Le Mans Series the last 2 years. You're going for 3 in a row. The big race next weekend is the Le Mans 24 Hour, which you've currently just got to. You've got testing this weekend, as you said. Tell us a little bit about Le Mans, what it means, the whole thing attached to it, and your experiences so far in the race.
Le Mans is impossible to explain without attending, I think. It's a fantastic race. First of all, I think this year they are expecting 350,000 spectators for the race, which is, I think, one of the biggest sporting events probably in the world. And on site, just on site, 350,000 spectators. So the atmosphere, the ambience is just amazing. Then the track itself is 13 kilometers long. Half of it is on a city, on streets. You have very long straight line, very high speed. We can reach up to, in the past year, 350. This year, the cars are a bit slower, 330 kph. So it's fast. There's traffic. You drive at night. There's very mixed conditions. It can be raining at night. I mean, this race has history, it's special. And I think if you ask any drivers, you want more to win Le Mans than winning the championship. So we have a big task this weekend.
Wow. So it's that big that for some, it's rather win the race than the actual championship. So tell us the car you're driving and your race number.
So we'll be racing in LMP2, which is the name for Le Mans Prototypes 2. It's a spec car, so there's 24 very similar cars. Basically, yeah. They're the same, just setup is different. There's three drivers on it. We have number 41, and we're definitely going to push hard to win it.
And you've got a very real chance?
Well, I think so. Actually, in 2021, same lineup, same car number. We were leading after 23 hours and 58 minutes. Oh. And unfortunately, the car stopped in the last lap, so it was really terrible for us because we lost Le Mans. We have revenge to take on this. Last year, we finished second. So last 2 years, we were either first or second the whole time in the race. So Hopefully in 23, it's ours.
And did you finish second because you'd lapped everyone else apart from the car that passed you?
No, so in 21, we finished far off because we didn't cross the finish line, so We didn't get classified.
Oh, okay.
We were leading with 40-second gap, but we didn't classify. Last year in 2022, We finished second in the race. So actually, I think we can be quite proud of this because being 2 years in a row fighting for the victory in a race is good. So again, the goal this year is to finish the job and get the win.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to Louis. Thank you for giving us your time today. Is it okay to perhaps speak to you after Le Mans and you can tell us about the experience and how you went?
Yeah, of course. Let's do that. No problem. Hopefully with good news.
Brilliant. Well, for today, Louis Delatraz, Switzerland racing driver. Good luck next Sunday and thank you very much.
Thank you.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Well, everybody, this week I'm being joined by a fantastic lady. It's Dawn Whittaker. She is Chief Fire Officer of East Sussex Rescue, and she is the CFO and lead for Drowning Prevention and Water Safety. Hi, Dawn. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good, thank you. Thank you for your time today.
Oh, no, wonderful. Thank you for joining us. You know, we cover quite a lot of sports and lifestyle, and obviously water, it does come into a part of that. And the safety in water is something, personally, I don't think is fully championed by people. You know, water becomes, I think people don't realize how dangerous it is. So if you could just tell us a little bit about what you do, about your position, and you know, the awareness you're trying to create, then we can go on to the actual danger that water possesses.
Yeah, sure. So water is wonderful. It's a natural element, it's powerful, but of course also a fantastic way of enjoying leisure. And don't we all love a walk by the water to improve our well-being? So we jointly promote the benefit of water, but also seek to promote water safety and education. Because you're right, John, generally people take water for granted a little bit and don't really realise the significance of the number of people that lose their lives in water every year. So it's our job to try and improve that awareness, help people understand the risk, and also equally to know what to do if they do see somebody in difficulty in water or find themselves in difficulty. So today, the National Water Safety Forum, which is a collective of lots of different organisations, all the organisations you'd expect, sport, leisure, rescue organisations, and I just happen to work in the Fire and Rescue Service, and it's a collective, and we are not only announcing the figures, the statistics from 2022, but we're also promoting Respect the Water, because we're just at that stage where the water's warming up, the weather's warming up, and people are getting out and about. So it's a really important time of the year to start our messaging in the UK about water safety.
Absolutely. And as you said, it's a lovable danger, I think, is one of the best ways to call it. I mean, you hit the nail on your head. Everyone loves to walk down by the river. I live like a 6-minute train ride from Windsor, you know, I mean, and you got Windsor, you got Eton, you've got other little rivers sort of running through where we are. And every year, and this is no word of a lie, Dawn, every year during the summer, there's a handful, if not more, of people under 18 that lose their lives in the rivers because they're all out with their friends, they're having fun. I'd like to say they're not drinking, but who knows? You know what I mean? You don't know, do you? And it's very dangerous, isn't it?
Well, you see, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, John. So water in of itself is dangerous. You think about all of the 1,000 people that go down to the beach in the UK in the summer that have a wonderful time with their family and they're perfectly safe. But actually, there are things that can make water a particular risk. And that's not only about the body of water itself. So let's take weirs as a real example of that. It is not sensible to go in and swim near a weir. The power and the strength of that water and the cascade can suck you under. The other second thing that makes water more risky is the behaviour of individuals. And there are a couple of things I'd illustrate there. So firstly, know your own limitations. Yeah. If you are not a strong swimmer, just remember that. You might just think, oh, I'll just dive in and swim for a short way. But actually, if you do find yourself in difficulty, if you've not got self-rescue skills, you're in trubs. And I think the other thing is people forget how cold the water is in the UK. Yeah. You might be out on a lovely warm day. You've got hot because the sun's shining, hopefully, she says, in this summer. Yeah. But actually, when you get in the water, it's really cold.
Mm.
And I'm sure, John, like many of your listeners, when you walk into the sea and you go down to the beach for your summer little break, you'd be quite shocked at how cold it is.
Yeah.
And that produces a natural reflex, a gasping action. Well, if you jumped in and your face is in the water or your head's under the water and you have that reaction, guess what happens? You swallow water. Yes. And, you know, if you're lucky, it goes in your lung and then you are in difficulty. Terrible, and you mentioned drinking. It's an important point not to be glib about it, but alcohol and water do not mix. It's a bit like driving. We're used to, as British nation now, aren't we, saying don't drink and drive. Don't drink and swim is what we need to say, because actually people's inhibitions are reduced. They'll do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do, they take more risk. But also their ability to deal with a risky situation or a dangerous occurrence becomes restricted and limited if they've got alcohol in their bloodstream. And it's quite concerning, the number of fatalities we have in the UK where there is alcohol in the bloodstream. So you make a good point there.
Yeah, thank you. But you've explained it much better. It's not just the drinking. It's actually the effects the drinking has by, as you said, your inhibitions are less. So you take a little bit more risk. Your ability to think clearly and deal with problems is reduced. And also, I imagine, if you are out having a nice day, because you're hot and thirsty, you tend to drink quicker and more as well. So you probably don't realise how your inhibitions have changed. So obviously, that is a cocktail for disaster, which is a real shame for anybody. But when children are throwing their lives away by perhaps trying to show off in front of their mates, I think you do obviously drowning prevention, which probably isn't, as I said, championed enough by people because it is so important. A couple of things you did mention, if I'm okay to bring them up, is you said how to cope with yourself in danger. What would be the go-to first couple of points to advise somebody at a class or a clinic that you have to do if you do find yourself in trouble?
Yeah, sure. So we've got quite a simple little mnemonic that is easy to teach your kids and perhaps good to talk to your teenagers about as well. And we call it call, tell, throw. And those three words just set out quite simply what we would give anybody's advice. So if you are in difficulty or see somebody else in difficulty, call. Call 999 quickly, because the sooner they're on the road, the better. Well, indeed, they might be getting on the sea if it's somebody in difficulty, you know, at the coast. Tell them that you've got somebody coming, so you help reassure them. But also tell them to get on their back, get their face and airway out of the water. And you might have seen the RNLI's Float to Live campaign.
Yeah.
It's actually saving lives, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
Tell them, get on your back, stay calm, I've rung some help.
Brilliant.
And the last thing is throw. If you've got something that will float, look, a football, a big litre bottle of lemonade, tip it out, screw the lid back on, throw them that bottle. It will float. It'll help them keep themselves above the water. Ideally, you've got a life ring nearby, one of the Perry Boys, the big orange rings. Get that to them if you can. But anything that's going to help them maintain their face and airway out of the water whilst those responders get there is going to be really important. So Cortel throw.
Oh, that's brilliant and great advice and things that you could quite well have with you if you're out with your friends. A football, a bottle of fizzy drink or something, as you said, you can empty. And obviously, always make sure you know where one of these boys are or one of these rings are if you are going to play about with the water.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, we try and promote through Respect the Water lots of fun activities as well.
Yeah.
Things you can do with your kids, your grandchildren, things that schools can utilise through the year. And we also give advice for people going abroad on holiday. You know, they're in an area they don't know.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there are different rules. And the other thing is, of course, if you do go to a leisure place, choose somewhere that you know is safe. Watch out for the lifeguards. Talk to the lifeguards when you get beach. They're great. They know the safe places and they will also give you some tips when you're enjoying yourself on the beach.
Very good idea, Dawn. If you're in trouble yourself, I know it's obviously totally different, but if there's no one to throw you anything, is it try and keep your mouth closed, come up to the top, lie on your back, stay calm? Is it just as simple as that, or are there a couple of good techniques?
Yeah. The key thing is float to live. Get on your back. Get your face and airway out of the water. It's really hard to do. I've done it myself.
Yeah.
Try and regulate your breathing.
Yeah.
Because if you're panicking, you know, you can't shout for help because you're gasping. So get yourself on your back. Give yourself a second.
Yeah.
And try and shout for assistance if you can. Ideally, you know, you've not gone there on your own or you've got mates. And then tell them, ring 999 and they will then deal with the phone call, because obviously pretty difficult to deal with a phone call if you're in the water. But I think, you know, we've seen some really powerful stories in the media. You know, it might not look cool to have a PFD on, but you can get some really snazzy little belt flotation devices now. Use them. I mean, people get a little bit complacent about it, but, you know, you might think you've technically got quite a lot of skills, but if somebody else gets into difficulty, you might be in the water longer than you're expecting to if you're supporting somebody else or supporting their airway. So just think about making yourself safe.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, you said it might not look cool and who cares, really? You know, your life's obviously more important than having a bit of fun. But thank you for those real good tips. A couple of other things, if you've got time, just to quickly mention. That you mentioned don't swim close to a weir. Now, I don't know if this has ever been scientifically looked at, but is there an idea of how much more powerful the current is by a weir as to normal river water?
Yeah, so in fire and rescue, it won't surprise you that we put our firefighters through training for something called swift water rescue, because occasionally they have to put themselves in that situation.
Yeah.
But the hydrodynamics, so the speed, means that even a fully qualified firefighter with flotation device and on a tow rope gets sucked under. So if you're in shorts and a t-shirt, you don't stand a chance.
No chance.
So even the professionals that get into that situation would regard that as a risky situation. Of course, the power or the dynamics will depend on a lot of things. How deep is the weir? How fast is the flow? Has there been recent rainfall?
Right.
Because all of those things change the dynamics. But it's a bit like putting a sock in a washing machine, frankly. You know, as the water goes down, there are dynamics created at the bottom of that weir that basically create a tumble dryer cycle. And it's really difficult to break out of it. And for those of your listeners that might know about rip currents out at sea, equally the same, fast, powerful moving current going out to sea. The dynamic of dealing with that, lots of information on the RNLI website for that. You either need to ride the rip and let it take you out, but it could be going out a long way, or swim parallel to it to get yourself out of it. So there are situations where even really strong swimmers can get themselves, you know, in some difficulty and trouble. But educating yourself is the key thing here.
I think you're right. Again, you say some people are, well, I say flippant, it's probably not the correct word, about the dangers and perils of the water. And, you know, if you read that someone's drowned, you think, well, how come they drowned? But you're right, there's so many unknowns below the surface that can pull you under, can snag you under. Education is the word, isn't it, really?
It absolutely is. And, you know, we're all about enjoy the water safely. And in the Fire and Rescue Service, just because we know lots of people have fires in the kitchen, we don't say don't cook, don't don't go in the kitchen. And it's the same with water. We're not into telling people not to do things, but we are trying to encourage them through the Respect the Water campaign to do things safely.
Brilliant. Well, Sazzy, we've run out of time today. I'd love to stay in touch and do more with you, if that's okay, because it's such a great thing that you're doing, and awareness that definitely needs to be out there, especially with the summer coming. It's sort of the ideal time. Could you just give us a couple of social media platforms that people can contact you on, or contact your organisation on, or some websites they can look up some information?
Yeah, absolutely. So I sit as the chair of the National Water Safety Forum, and we're on Twitter. And people can actually go to the website and join on the contact form at the bottom and get our newsletter, which gives regular updates all about water safety issues. I'm on Twitter personally at CFOESFRS, and I go on about water all the time, but obviously about other issues as well, road safety, fire safety in your home. So forgive me, I'm a bit of a safety geek. And of course, some fantastic organisations, the RNLI, the Royal Life Saving Society, the Canals and Rivers Trust, the Maritime Coast Guard Agency, all great partners to work with. Surf Life Saving, there's so many, I couldn't mention them all, but actually we all come together through the National Water Safety Forum, so it's a good place to start.
Brilliant. Well, Dawn, I'm going to definitely stay in touch, and I'm going to follow you on Twitter from the radio and from my personal one. So the listeners can either get in contact with the Twitter and everything that you've given us, or through the radio. I'd like to stay in touch as well, because I'd like to speak more to you about what you do, just even if it's to save one life, you know, it's a thing. So thanks, Dawn, for today. Absolutely wonderful.
Cheerio. Thank you, John.
Bye.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Well, everybody, with me today again, I'm delighted to say it's our good friend all the way from America, Heather Hadley. Hi, Heather, how are you?
Hi, John, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Absolute pleasure. Always is a pleasure. Always get loads of viewings because it's so interesting talking to you. You know, a female racing car driver making big waves in the sport. Last time we spoke, Heather, you decided to go to the MX5 Series Championship, which was a different style of car, an upgrade on what you were doing, driving under the IMSA name, taking in loads of tracks that you would not normally do, tracks that are well known to people in the UK. So very exciting season. But take us back to the start of the year. Tell us a little bit about the MX5 Cup and any exciting thing that happened before your first race in Daytona.
Yeah, absolutely. So at the beginning of the year, we raced at Daytona in January. It was a bit of an overwhelming experience because this track is something that I've kind of just looked at from afar and admired since I was the 9-year-old girl that first started racing. And so it was, I would say, a full circle moment for me where I have Mazda Motorsports backing me and there with me supporting me, and they were helping me at the age of 12 to promote me, and they invited me out to Laguna Seca to speak at the SCCA runoff. So it was just awesome to see this kind of full circle moment where I was here racing with Mazda at Daytona, at this historical, prominent racetrack, and it was just an amazing experience overall. And I did make great progress on the track over the 2 days, but unfortunately I did get caught up in an accident. Somebody had spun coming out of the bus stop and kind of threw dirt all over the track, and so the driver ahead of me got caught up in it, and then I got caught up in it. So it was an unfortunate end to a great weekend, but yeah, it was just very awesome to have that moment for sure. I will remember that.
No, fabulous. And it really shows how far you are down the line, Heather, because you said you got overwhelmed a little bit by racing at Daytona, and who would? That and Indianapolis are probably the two iconic circuits, and you get to race there, and it's your first race as well, so you haven't even had time to settle into the car, or race in the car, I should say. You're thrown in at Daytona. The fact is, you were unlucky, as you said, not to finish where you wanted to finish, but you still consider that, do you know what I mean? Not failure, but you're still disappointed with that, rather than just being, I raced at Daytona, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? It just shows you your drive, your ambition, and why you're so successful.
Yeah, I think it's always important to keep challenging yourself and pushing for better results. But at the end of the day, I was just super happy to be racing at that track, and for my first time in this series and one of my first times in the car, I would definitely call it a win.
Fantastic. And why wouldn't you? I mean, as you said, Daytona, an amazing experience it must have been. Tell us about the other tracks that you're going to visit during this MX5 series.
Yeah, so we just got done with St. Petersburg in Florida, and we have coming up in May, we have Laguna Seca in California.
Yeah.
And after that, we go to Watkins Glen in New York and VIR, Road Atlanta, and Road America. So we have some very exciting tracks that I'm looking forward to getting some experience on.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough to have to kind of go through that learning process at each and every one of these tracks, since I have never been to any of them before.
Absolutely. But I'm looking forward to- I mean, how exciting is that? You know, you said VIR in Virginia, you've got Road America, Watkins Glen, Laguna Seca, as well as Daytona. I mean, how excited must you be for this year?
Yeah, I would say this year is absolutely the best year of my racing career so far. It's just, I can't put it any other way than just an amazing opportunity. That's really what it is, because the opportunity to get the Mazda Women's Initiative Scholarship at the MX-5 Cup Shootout last year has really just opened all of these doors for me and made it possible. And so, yeah, I cannot thank Mazda enough, because racing at these historical tracks, these amazing tracks that I've watched since I was a little girl, is really just awesome.
Yeah, amazing. And we'll come back to how you did at St. Petersburg and your plans for, you know, the rest of the season, how you can see yourself going, how your first experience was in the MX-5 Cup. You did mention the Mazda Initiative Award. Tell us a little bit about that, and was it an award that you actually won?
Yeah, so it's a scholarship, and they offered 3 scholarships at the MX-5 Cup Shootout last year, which was a 2-day event where they invited, I believe, 12 drivers to kind of just evaluate them based off of on-track and off-track abilities. And so they kind of were looking at how we interviewed and how just we're like as people, our public speaking abilities, all different types of off-track things. And then they also evaluated us on our on-track capabilities, whether we were able to put down a fast lap time, whether we were able to be consistent. So all of these things kind of they were looking at. And at the end of the 2 days, I was lucky enough to be awarded the Women's Initiative Scholarship. And so that's $75,000 in total contributing to this year's season in the Mazda MX-5 Cup Series. So it's a big, big help, and yeah. Is the reason I'm able to do this.
Yeah, a big, big chunk of money. Not even, I don't think, half of what you actually need, but a big chunk of money. Obviously a great weight for you, because I know your mum and dad and your family are amazing towards you, but I know you do tend to feel like a little bit of pressure of racing for them. So it must be nice for you to actually go into the season without that over your head, if that makes sense, to know that you've got the season going, you've got this great initiative that's helping out tremendously. I don't know if that's helped you with your racing, if that's helped you, you know, just in general life, have a little bit less on you. But I can only imagine how pressured your life is with schoolwork, with gym work, with getting to know the car. And when it comes down to it, every time you race, you put your life on the line. Yeah, tell us about how you're feeling about this year. Tell us about how you're feeling in yourself.
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling like I'm getting a little bit more comfortable in the car and in the series, racing against these drivers. It takes me a bit normally to acclimate to these types of things. And so I think I did a pretty good job at adjusting to this entire experience at the beginning of the year. But
yeah,
Now I'm definitely, I think, fitting into the grid a little bit more. And I'm just really excited to start moving up through the field and hopefully get a podium finish or two by the end of the year.
Yeah, no, that sounds perfect. So until that unfortunate incident at Daytona, how was the weekend going?
It was good. It was good. Yeah, the first race was challenging, to say the least, because when you kind of lose your drafting partners, you just kind of drop back.
Right, yeah.
Very, very quickly. But it was a big learning experience. That's absolutely what it was from the very beginning. And I just keep learning so much at each one of these weeks.
We finish off this week's show with our SLB Sports Roundup featuring golf, horse racing, cricket, darts, motorsport and tennis. We start with golf, and the third major of the season, the US Open, was held at the Los Angeles Country Club, and it was won by Wyndham Clark on minus 10, one shot clear of Rory McIlroy, still trying to close in on that fifth major, with Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, back in third on minus 7. This week, the PGA Tour holds a Travelers Championship from the TPC River Highlands in Connecticut, and the DP World Tour hosts the BMW International Open from the golf club München Eichenrad in Munich. LPGA held the major LPGA Classic from the Blythefield Country Club in Belmont, and it was won by Irish star Leona Maguire on minus 21. She finished two shot clear of Aria Utanyagan on minus 19, with a further shot back to Lin Zhu and Amy Yang in third. This week, it's another major on the women's tour, the KPMG Women's PGA Championship from the Balsams Roll Lower Course in Springfield, New Jersey. Horse racing. Nothing really to report last week, but it's Royal Ascot this week, and we've already given you the 8 selections to follow over the past 3 weeks. We wish you well with them, and we hope you have a fantastic Ascot if you're going. The French Oaks saw us collect another winner with our horse to follow in France, Blue Rose Sienne, winning a second Classic, following up in the French Oaks after winning the French Guineas. The big race in the near future is on the 2nd of July with the Irish Derby. We're looking for the English Derby winner, August Rodin, to take part and win. Cricket, and it's the Ashes. It's finally started. England versus Australia, arguably the two best sides in the world. And we're stuck in the middle and a very even contest after day 3 of the first test. England won the toss and batted in their flamboyant style for 393. Australia replied with 386, so only 7 runs between them. Joe Root getting 118 not out in England's innings, and Usman Khawaja with 141 in Australia's innings. England started their reply with rainy and cloudy skies and a 28 for 2, but they're 7 in front, so they're 35 for 2, with Joe Root and Ollie Pope at the crease. Darts, and it was the World Cup of Darts, as we said, from Frankfurt in Germany, and it was won, unsurprisingly, and as predicted, by Wales. That brilliant partnership of Gerwyn Price and Johnny Clayton beat Scotland, Gary Anderson and Peter Wright in the final, 10 legs to 2. Gary Anderson and Peter Wright played well and got to the final. England very much underperformed. Michael Smith and Rob Cross getting beaten in the quarterfinals by Germany, who done well in their home ground. However, Wales were far superior, led the averages and won the trophy. On to motorsport and MotoGP, we had the German Grand Prix from the Sachsenring. The sprint race was won by Johann Zarco through the Ducati Pramac Racing team, who are flying at the moment. Second, the current world champion Frankie Bagnaia, the Ducati Lenovo team. Third, Jack Miller for the KTM team. The main race was won by another Ducati Pramac Racing rider, Jorge Martin. Frankie Bagnaia was second again, with Johann Zarco, the sprint race winner, taking third. Frankie Bagnaia leads the standings on 131 points, 21 clear now of Marco Bezzecchi riding the Valentino Rossi 46 Ducati machine on 110, with Jorge Martin creeping into third, just 3 behind, on 107. World Superbikes are back from the 30th of June to the 2nd of July with the Prosecco UK round in Donington, which is round 6. British Superbikes held round 4 and races 10, 11 and 12 from Knockhill using the full circuit. Race 1 was won by Glenn Irwin of the Beer Monster Ducati team. Second place, Kyle Ride, the ONG Racing Yamaha team. Third place, Jason O'Halloran, also Yamaha, but for McCams. Kyle Ride took race 2 after Glenn Irwin fell off near the end when in front. Tommy Bridewell, also for the Beer Monster Ducati team, finished second. Jason O'Halloran filling another third spot. And race 3, the balance was redressed by Glenn Irwin, who took that race as well, from his teammate Tommy Bridewell, with ONG Racing Yamaha's Ryan Vickers in third. Tommy Bridewell now leads the standings on 163 points, 8 clear of Kyle Ride and a further 3 back to Tommy Bridewell's teammate Glenn Irwin on 152. Speedway, this week is round 5 from Gurzo in Poland. NASCAR, who had a rare week off, are back this week also with the Alley 400 from National Speedway. And the IndyCar Series held the Sonsio Grand Prix from Road America in Wisconsin. It was won, unsurprisingly, by the man in form, Alex Palou, driving for Chip Ganassi. Indy 500 winner Joseph Newgarden drove another great race to finish second for Team Penske. And our favourite rookie, Pato O'Ward, was third for Arrows McLaren. Alex Palou leads the standings on 324 points. Marcus Ericsson, his Chip Ganassi teammate, is second, but 74 back on 250. And Joseph Newgarden is now in third for Team Penske on 243. They're back on July the 2nd with the Honda Indy 200 at Mid-Ohio. Formula E are now looking this week at the USA E-Prix from Portland and Oregon. And Formula One held the Canadian Grand Prix from the Gilles Villeneuve circuit in Montreal. And it was won, unsurprisingly, by Max Verstappen of Red Bull. A dominant victory from pillar to post. Fernando Alonso was second in the Aston Martin after a great battle with the rejuvenated Lewis Hamilton, who finished third in the Mercedes. Max Verstappen leads the standings on 195 points. He is 69 clear of his teammate Sergio Perez, who had another strange weekend. He's on 126, with Fernando Alonso in third on 117. Red Bull lead the standings by miles, 321 points, 154 points ahead of Mercedes on 167, who are 13 clear of Aston Martin on 154. They're back on the 2nd of July with the Austrian Grand Prix from the Red Bull Ring. This weekend, Watkins Glen hosts the IMSA round for two of our drivers that we have on the radio and we work with. We're proud to say that Louis Delatraz, who finished second in his class, the LMP2 class of the FIA Endurance, is driving for Team Aqua in the IMSA six-hour endurance race. And Heather Hadley, who drives in the Mazda MX-5 Championship, are both racing together at Watkins Glen this coming weekend. Good luck to both of them. Tennis and the warm-up for Wimbledon at Nottingham. The men's was won by Andy Murray, back to winning form after all his injury problems. He beat Arthur Cazzo 6-4, 6-4 in the final. And the women's was a first all-British final, with British number one, Katie Bolter, beating Jodie Burridge 6-3, 6-3. We're now looking forward to Wimbledon on the 4th of July from SW19. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everyone, I want to say thank you for listening to another what we think is a blockbuster show. We love bringing you new guests, new sports, and we love giving you the results from sports all around the world. I want to say a huge thank you to Louis Delatraz, first time on the show, Le Mans second place, FIA endurance driver, XF1 test driver, Formula 2 driver. What a superstar. It was great to have Louis on, and we hope that you love his story. Look out for Louis soon with an updated interview of how he got on at Le Mans and his thoughts of the race. Also, Dawn Whittaker, CFO of East Sussex Fire and Rescue, head of drowning prevention. This lady does so many amazing things to help people. Please listen again to her interview and do what you can to keep yourself safe during the summers if you're in the sea or by rivers. And then Heather Hadley. Heather is driving this weekend at Watkins Glen with Louis in separate competitions. Heather's really come forward. She's 21 years old. She's an eight-time US Legend Car champion and now stepped up into the Mazda MX Cup 5 for IMSA. I hope you enjoyed Heather's story as well about what's happening this year. Thank you to you, the listeners. We appreciate everything. And thank you to Johan, Raffaella and the whole team at UK Health Radio for giving us such an amazing platform. We'll see you all next week.